that typifies the decline of American society, it is the mayhem and the disintegration of the family. And I couldn't have a better illustration of what part of our family is going through at this time on that subject. I came across an interesting quote from Reader's Digest that introduces this whole idea of what Paul's now going to in Ephesians 6 as he deals with family relationships here. In fact, he's continuing on with that same idea. It started in chapter 5. In an article entitled The Perfect Home, it says that one child makes it a home in a liberal education course for both himself and parents. Two children make it a private school, and three or more make it a campus. But the article continues, and it says, but many parents today are not sure that they are up to being professors in this university, and even then, they are unsure of what should be offered in the curriculum. We're going to spend some time on that this week and next week as we talk about responsibility of kids and parents. Today we're going to be focusing on kids as we look at Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. Please look in your Bibles where it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Verses 1 through 3 introduce the duty children have toward their parents. It actually harks back to Ephesians 5:21, which is the thematic set for passage for this entire section that began in chapter 5 and is now flowing into chapter 6. 5:21 says, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. So what is following that section and what we already covered regarding husbands and wives and submission in the home is that what follows here is that there should be a submissive heart in all things. Everything that takes place in all of these relationships is to be characterized by a submissive heart. William Barclay pointed out that Paul's remarks in Ephesians 5 not only elevated women, but it also elevated children in a very unusual context in Roman society. Roman law at the time called for the patria potestas, which meant the father's power. A Roman father had absolute power over his family. He could sell them as slaves. He could make them work in the fields, even in chains. He could take the law into his own hands. He could punish as he liked. He could even inflict the death penalty on his child. Further, the power of the Roman father extended over a child's entire life. So long as a father lived, a Roman son never came of age. Fathers could even reject their children from birth. If the father stopped or stooped and lifted up a child, the child was accepted and was raised as his. If he turned away, the child was rejected and literally discarded. Such rejected children were either left to die or were picked up by those who trafficked in infants. These people raised children to be slaves or to stock brothels. One Roman father wrote to his wife from Alexandria, if good luck to you, you have a child. If it is a boy, let it live. If it is a girl, throw it out. End quote. And I was thinking, there is absolutely nothing new under the sun. So we think about regions of the world that traffic in children. I think about what goes on in Thailand. A center for these kinds of trade and the trafficking of young kids, staffing brothels as people come from all over the world for a time of vacation for these kinds of things. Here we are back 2,000 years and the same kinds of things going on. It is against this backdrop that Paul asserts a new relationship within the family. So kids, let's look at some of the key words that are in this text. The first one is children. Children. Children, obey your parents. The word here, children, tekna, is not a reference to young children only, But to all offspring, that would be sons and daughters still dependent on parents who must honor and obey them. We also have the word obey here. And it comes from the Greek word meaning to hear under. The sense is that it is to listen attentively and to respond positively to what is heard. Fundamental in relationships of children to parents is this idea of hearing, listening, and obeying. Now, Paul has in mind, I think, in this text at this point, natural law. That is, the law relationship that is written upon the human conscience apart from special revelation. That is, when he says, children, obey, for this is right. Natural law in this sense would be, that is something that you can find in every culture all over the globe. It's not something that is confined to Christian orthodoxy. All cultures, whether ancient or contemporary, have this idea rooted in families that mothers and fathers are the authority in their homes and they raise children to obey them. That's part of what I would consider to be natural law. But then when he goes on and he says, in the Lord, this part means that obeying parents as a reflective of their obedience to the Lord. Here he's beginning to contour this down a little bit more. And he notes that parents stand in the stead of God. Let me illustrate this in the following. Recently, I just got my mail and I received a communication from an association board that administrates a piece of property that I own that is out of state. And that board is conducting its annual meeting. And they sent me a proxy vote form that I can sign and delegate the responsibility of my vote as an owner to someone else who is going to be there. They become my proxy. They vote for me. They vote with my power. Paul's sense here is that parents stand as God in the home. They represent his authority to those children. It is a twofold premise. Children must obey and parents must enforce obedience. And this is because the parent stands as God in relationship to the child. Jim Boyce noted that the Jewish handling of the Ten Commandments places the fifth command, which is to honor thy father and mother, in the first tablet rather than the second, as does the Christian section. So if you look at ours on the wall, we have that traditional way of putting it that there are four commandments that deal directly with God and the other six deal with our relationship to man. But in the Jewish way of forming those, they always had the fifth in the first column because the idea was that the parent stands in direct relationship to the children as God. To disobey a parent was to be going directly against God himself. John Stott argued on this point that this is right. It's right, he says, because obedience to parents is part of our direct relationship to God, and that disobedience to parents is at the heart of all spiritual rebellion. You think about it. You have a kid that has a problem with authority in the home, and you can just about bet on it that they're going to have problems with authority outside of the home as well. Stott points out that this is why under Jewish law that most extreme penalties of death was prescribed for anyone who cursed his parents or was considered to be incorrigible. Exodus chapter 21, 15 and 17, he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Leviticus 29, if therefore is anyone who curses his father or his mother, he shall be put to death. He who has cursed his father or his mother has blood guiltiness upon him. And then in one of the sermons of Moses himself in chapter 21 of Deuteronomy, beginning at verse 18, we read these words. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son, who will not obey his father or mother. And when they chastise him, he will not even listen to them. Then his father and mother shall seize him. They shall bring him out to the elders of the city at the gateway of his hometown. They shall say to the elders of the city, "This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of that city shall stone him to death. So shall you remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear of it and fear. This is serious stuff. I mean, we wouldn't think in those categories today, but I think at least what we do get is the idea that this sense of having obedience in the home, that it is taught and enforced, must be upheld, and that when children do not obey their parents, God considers this an assault so significant that it becomes part of the capital offenses of Israel, requiring the death penalty. Paul comments on this further to the church of Colossae when he writes in chapter 3, verse 20 of Colossians, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord." So you can see it in the opposite. Then when we don't obey our parents in all things, we are not pleasing God. And kids, we know, and I think you know and understand, that the kind of obedience here that we're talking about is that which Paul introduced with a submissive heart. There are kids that actually will knuckle under and do what their parents tell them to do, but at the same time, they make it miserable all along the way because they resist in spirit. God is after the spiritual part of your being to learn submission, to learn what it means to submit in heart, that then carries out obedience